Hi, I'm Leah Lane, an award-winning travel writer and author of Places I Remember, Tales, Truths, Delights from 100 Countries. On this podcast, we share conversations with travelers about fascinating destinations and memorable experiences around the world. Our guest is Meg Daly, president and CEO of Friends of the Underline. The Underline is a new 10-mile linear park which will go from the Miami River to Dadeland under the Miami Metro Rail. The first section just opened from the Miami River through Brickell Village. Welcome, Meg, and congratulations.
Thank you. It's really good to see you. And thanks for inviting me.
Well, I'd love you to tell us a little more about the Underline.
Sure. Actually, I was out on the Underline this morning. We opened just under 3 weeks ago. And this first segment goes from the Miami River, which is downtown, to about half a mile. It's 10 acres of 10 miles and 120 acres when we're done. And this morning I was out with our horticulture intern, and she was giving our entire team a tutorial on every plant we have in the first half mile, which is 30,000 new plants and trees.
Wow. And that means butterflies, I'll bet.
Well, I think you saw them out there, Leah.
I did.
We have a fresh crop of monarchs. We counted at least 20 cocoons and hundreds of monarchs. There's also sulfur butterflies. And a little bit south, there's an endangered species called the Atala. And it's this little black iridescent butterfly. And there, so each area has its own guests.
Well, it's very exciting. The Underline is a real game changer for Miami. And I thought since we both grew up in Miami during different eras, it would be very interesting to discuss how Miami has changed in our lifetimes in other ways. And since I'm older, I'll start with some memories that start after World War II. I go way back. I remember when South Beach was hot. And I mean hot because it didn't have air conditioning. It was otherwise not so hot. There were lots of retirees sitting on the porches on Ocean Drive, but you had to go to the movies to get cool. That's how far back I go. You would just get a movie, whatever it might be. You didn't really care. And you went and you sat there and you cooled off. And I remember even when Eastern Airlines was the only airline and the airport was just kind of a big hangar and you walked outside to the planes. And I remember when mosquitoes were a bad problem and they sprayed overhead with DDT, which was probably poison. And they didn't do that for very long, but I do remember that as a child. And I remember drive-in movies and drive-in restaurants where the servers would bring you hot dogs to your car on roller skates. The hot dogs weren't on the roller skates, the servers were, but they put the food on a tray and set it up in your car window. That was really fun. Do you remember a place on the 79th Street Causeway called Fun Fair? Had lots of games. Was
oh,
it
no,
open?
No, we didn't go that far north.
You were from Miami. I know. I'm on the beach. Well, that was really fun. That was one of our, we didn't have, you know, iPhones and all that. So we would go there to play games like pinball and stuff like that. And I remember when the Everglades was considered just a big swamp. And we went to the parrot jungle, the monkey jungle, the serpentarium where they milked the snake. They said they milked it, but I don't know what that was. It was venom. And the owner later died, unfortunately. He was poisoned by the snake venom. I don't know how long that was going. I moved to New York area in, I moved out of Miami actually in 1960s. So you'll have to catch me up on some of the later memories. These are old time memories. I do remember the Cubans arriving in 1960. And I remember cabanas at hotels where you would go for the summer to cool off again because of the heat. And there would be these big shows with Frank Sinatra and Sammy Davis Jr. It was a really exciting time for entertainment around here. And let's see, I remember a dog track across from Joe Stone Crabs where the greyhounds would run after a motorized rabbit. And then the people would all cross the street and eat stone crabs. That was a real Miami evening. And let's see, I remember something I don't like. I remember as a child, I purposely drank from a water fountain that said colored because I didn't like the idea of it. I knew even as a child that was wrong. And I remember sitting in the back of the bus in my little 10-year-old protest because Miami was segregated for much of my childhood. But that's all I can think of at the moment. Yeah. What about you? You can pick it up.
Well, as you moved away in 1960, my parents moved us here from Boston in 1960. I was 6 months old. And your memories of Miami Beach, mine are of Coral Gables, for those listening, it's one of the early suburbs designed by George Merrick, who also came from Boston, a little town in Duxbury. And we settled in this beautiful old Spanish from 1926. And my memories are leaving the house in the morning. And if I came back before lunch, my mom would shoo us out of the house. So we were these rug rats kind of stomping around the neighborhood, jumping in our neighbors' pools because we didn't have one. It was hot. But my family, we were big activists. So my mom, we had five children. And so my parents would always sort of stuff petitions in our hands and tell us to go get signatures, which is one of the reasons the Biltmore Hotel is still here.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we talked about past and present. So my parents, my dad was an attorney. My mom was a housekeeper, but very active in many causes. And so the Biltmore Hotel, you know, really one of the gems of South Florida, I think, modeled after the Giralda in Spain, was going to be redeveloped. And so they preserved it. And at that time, it was a VA hospital. And then no one knew what to do with it. So then it was called a white elephant. It's now beautifully restored and just a treasure on the Biltmore Golf Course.
It absolutely is. I didn't know you had a connection to that. I thank you for that as well, your family and you, which kind of brings us up to the present a little bit, because your father, Parker Thompson, was one of the founders of the Arsht Performing Arts Center. And from 2000 to the present, Miami just became a cultural haven. It had very little culture when I was growing up, per se. I mean, I don't remember it beyond the Boom Boom Room of the Fountain Blue Hotel was where we would go to hear music or, you know, that kind of thing. But since 2001, since I moved back here, it's been incredible. This is a real cultural center right now. So tell us a little bit about the Arsht and how it started and when it started.
So that was a 23-year odyssey for my father. He was involved with the local arts council with Michael Spring, who still oversees art in public places. And, you know, Fort Lauderdale, Naples, you know, even in Palm Beach and even Orlando had a beginning of a performing arts center, and Miami didn't. You talked about the Jackie Gleason Theater. We had these smaller facilities, but certainly not a facility with the kind of sound, capacity that we really needed. And so Dad said, we need a performing arts center. And 23 years later, we got one. And it's world class. He was responsible for the Miami Herald donating the land on one side of the street and Sears donating the land on the other side of the street, which made the two halls. A lot of people don't know why we have the two, the concert and the Ballet Opera House. And, you know, and now with Art Basel, I mean, I had lunch with a New Yorker yesterday and Chicagoan, and she said, you know, I really think that Miami has gained its reputation and its place in the sun for the arts. And I think a lot of that was from the Performing Arts Center.
Absolutely. We have also the museums. You have the PAM Museum and you have the New Science Museum and you have Wynwood with the beautiful walls, the New World Symphony. I mean, Miami, I used to say, well, it's wonderful weather, and I'd have to stop after that when I was, again, younger, and there wasn't much else to say. It was a beautiful place to live, but there wasn't much culture, but now it's absolutely terrific. Of course, that has spurred on restaurants, amazing restaurants.
Well, there weren't that many when I was growing up. We would usually go to a steak and salad place when I was a kid, and my parents would get us to fill up and hopefully go to sleep. And that was right on US 1 where, you know, we had, you know, maybe a Denny's. It just wasn't much offer here. And that's actually where we're extending the underline all the way down south to Dadeland. And now we have these announcements of these great New York restaurants coming here. And then there's really a lot of young talent. And we also had, remember, we had the the Wynwood, you know, sort of pop up where you had all the great new restaurants, and now they've moved out to Doral. So there's a lot of creativity and a lot of, I think a lot of opportunity here.
There are many, many new neighborhoods, art neighborhoods, and then there are wonderful neighbors, Brickell, Midtown, Edgewater, and now along the Miami River, which has been a underused and underappreciated area. It's becoming very, very chic right now. And great architects have come by. We have Zaha Hadid, Frank Gehry, Renzo Piano, who did the arch. It's exciting, but there's also heavy traffic, bad drivers, I have to say. Mm-hmm. We have some public transport, but we just got the Bright Line, which is a very fast moving train. But that brings us back to the Underline, because you are taking us to the future, which is hopefully more safe, pedestrian oriented, and green. So tell us a little bit about that.
So you brought up really good points. We're a young city, and it was built in the 50s, really around the car. So we like to think that we have to, you know, sort of re-hardwire our city, which is infrastructure, which is expensive and takes a long time to do. So the Underline goes from downtown to South Dade. So it's this long stretch within the urban core. And it has many purposes. One is its walkability, bikeability, connection to mass transit, which is our metro rail. It runs through 8 transit stations. Early studies show that we could reduce traffic by at least 5 to 7% if people just don't drive a short distance to the train station and walk and bike instead. And it's really about, like, I remember riding my bike to school. We talk about those memories. And, you know, we're trying to create this network of trails. So of all ages, whether you're older, younger, you feel safe walking and biking. Recent report just came out saying that this is one of the most dangerous places to walk in the United States. And so we have work to do. But I think that we have some leadership and certainly the support for the Underline, which is fully funded for construction for the 10 miles. You know, we now, what else is going to connect to that? How can it be sort of this backbone of a larger system? And what we're working on now, we have to complete the 10-mile project by 2025. It's complicated, but tied to our grants. And what does that mean? What does that look like? So it's really a 10-mile neighborhood park. I was telling you before, we just did this tour this morning with all of our plants. So the layer of resiliency and sustainability through plants that are all native. We're adding a technology component. There's a health and wellness and recreation component with basketball, soccer, and all these facilities are just in this first half mile, and it's crazy busy and so much fun to see.
It is.
But also places to connect, because you mentioned those distinct neighborhoods, right? But they don't really communicate with each other. So how do we bring a place that everybody feels welcome? And so put that all together, and I think you add it all up and it equals life. and it equals life for today and hopefully life for the future and for generations to come.
It really helps climate change as well, because all of these things you're talking about help the land and help to make us greener. And we are going to have a problem with the sea, and we are preparing for that with seawalls and pumps and all kinds of infrastructure. But having fewer cars and being able to walk and thinking of that is a major component of a better future in terms of climate change as well.
So I'm really glad you brought that up, because part of the resiliency piece for the Underline is we're introducing green infrastructure. So you have hard infrastructure like those seawalls, but green infrastructure is bioswales. So it's using this sort of soft drainage systems throughout the 10 miles. So that the water can percolate into our unique system, which is a very shallow aquifer. We're built on limestone. If you have people from New York, they're built on granite, which is why they can support so many skyscrapers and big buildings. And so how do we use plants to really help us be more resilient? You mentioned CO2. So a lot of Miami is a big hotspot because of asphalt and heat gain. So adding more tree canopy, we're adding 4,000 trees. I mean, this is all just things I love because I love green, but it's also just a really, in the long term, a very inexpensive way to offset heat gain.
It's terrific. Thank you again. We've covered the past or the future, but the name of the podcast is Places I Remember. What's a favorite memory of yours of Miami?
So I think you've heard this story before, but 7 years ago, I had a bike accident and I broke both of my arms. And as an A-type person, that's very humbling because I couldn't do anything for myself. But it was also a great lesson that I could, you know, lean on the people who I love. And like I said, can you drive me to physical therapy 3 times a week? And after a couple of months of healing, I realized I could take the train, the metro rail near my house, near University of Miami, and just to Coconut Grove. And then I walked below the train tracks the rest of the way. July, hot, in the shade of the train tracks. And I've driven past this sort of stretch of land that's like a big scar cutting through our county. And being in the space, I realized how wide it is and how much space there is. It's 100 feet wide. And again, I mentioned 120 acres for the 10 miles. And I thought, why don't we turn this into a park? And so anyone who's been to the High Line, we have the same design team. You talked about great design coming to Miami, James Corner Field Operations. And we said, let's just embark on that idea. And I remember the moment of slowing down and walking in a space that I've driven by my whole life. And it woke me up to opportunity. Instead of saying that's blighted, I said, wow, we can do something with this and turn it an asset for the community. So it's a great memory, and it just keeps on giving because we keep on getting more of the underline every day.
It's fantastic. I thank you so much for that and for coming here. Miami will be better and even more magical now and in the future because of your vision of the underline. Thank you. We all thank you.
Well, thank you, Leah. And as you know, I have so many people to thank. And we're probably out of time, but I do want to recognize our partner in Miami-Dade County. This is their land. They've trusted us with the planning and visioning and partnering on building it. And the hundreds of volunteers who help us every day. So, and thank you for your interest in the underline.
And I love it. I walk it. I live near it, and I walk it all the time now. It's wonderful. So thanks again.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening to our award-winning podcast. We've recorded over 100 episodes of Places I Remember. So follow us on any podcast app. And new monthly episodes are also on YouTube with gorgeous video. My book, Places I Remember, is available in print and Kindle, and I read the audio version. Follow my travel writing at Forbes.com. Contact me at the links in the show notes or on my website, PlacesIRememberLeahLane.com, and keep making your own travel memories.